My name is Frank Weltner, and I am the librarian of G-Watch, and I am here to welcome you to the world today.
We are certainly living in very interesting times, times in which the Zionists of this world, the Rothschilds, the IPACs, the State of Israel, the Mossad, the Shin Bet, and all the other operatives are very busy trying to control those persons into whose government they have wheedled themselves into fat seats of power, where they have been able to get the United Kingdom, the United States, Australia, Canada, and many other nations to commit their young people to wars for Israel. In particular, recently, the wars in Afghanistan and in Iraq. Wars which are doomed to failure from the very beginning because these wars do not take into consideration the fact that these nations have been surviving for thousands and thousands of years. And the reason that they survive is whenever an occupying force enters their lands, they know precisely what to do to eventually defeat that force. And if they did not, these states would have been dissolved and would no longer exist. The fact that they do exist and that we can trace their history for thousands and thousands of years is proof positive that any occupying army worth its salt that goes into an area like that does so at its own significant danger, and that it will indeed be defeated by its own aggressiveness. All that people have to do to defeat an occupying army is to hide their weapons, hide their uniforms, and wait. And after the invading army decides where it's going to put its fortresses, these are scouted out and infiltrated by people who go there to work, so that every corridor is known, so that every activity there is known, so that all the comings and goings are seen, so that people can be picked off one for one after they come out of the castle, which today is known in Iraq as the so-called Green Zone. But the only thing green about the Green Zone in Iraq is the fact that green means that you can go. And it means that the enemies of the United States of America and of Great Britain can go into those zones almost at will, either with a mortar or with people who work there carrying bombs, and eventually blow up many people within that so-called safe area or green zone. It was a great mistake to follow the dictates of IPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, and to go into the Republic of Iraq. Iraq had everything that we wanted. It gave us everything that we wanted. It had a secular, non-religious dictator who was anti-Islamic, by the name of Saddam Hussein, who even kissed up to our CIA and went to war for us against Iran, and for whom we gave bombs and grenades filled with gases, illegal material to use so we could see exactly what would happen when they were used. And millions of people on both sides, both in Iraq and Iran, died as a result of our seduction of that particular nation state. And so here we come back again, under the aegis of IPAC, which has corrupted the entire American government into a pro-Zionist government, a government that doesn't really work for the good of the American people, but works for the good of the Zionist people of Israel, that great killing nation which has ensconced itself on the shores of the Mediterranean, within the lands of another people, who were living there in peace and quiet until the Zionists came there around 1900 and began to maraud and kill, to threaten, to intimidate, and to drive the native peoples away, taking their orange groves, their lemon groves, their olive groves, their farms, their houses, their streets, their mosques, everything that they had was taken from them. This great genocide, which has occurred over time, to remove most of the Arabs from certain cities and areas, has wreaked havoc with the foreign policy of the United States and of Western Europe. What we need from that area is the oil which is produced by Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, and many of the Emirates. Israel produces almost no oil whatsoever. So being in control of Israel, which we are not, by the way, we are not in control of Israel at all. If we were in control of Israel, we would have a nation that is totally depleted of oil. It simply doesn't have oil at all. There's a few wells here and there, but it's about as productive in oil as, let's say, the state of Tennessee in the United States of America, which has almost no oil whatsoever. It is not a place that you want to be. Where you want to be is in Saudi Arabia, in Iran, in Iraq, in places where the oil flows very easily, and where there are huge reserves of that particular material. That material is the lifeblood of Western culture and commerce. We have become nothing, of course, except a mall culture, a culture of fat, satisfied pigs who watch our Jewish television sets, which are owned and operated by Zionists in New York City and in Los Angeles, and who tell us everything that we think, hear, feel, and see. And when we are to get up, when we are to go to bed, everything that we do is told to us by the Zionists over the media. Most of you probably wake up listening to an iPod or to a radio station that plays music which is owned by Zionist industrialists who own Viacom or other entities which own almost all of the recording artists that you will ever hear. So everything that you hear comes through their lens. So by the time you get to work, you've already listened to 20 or 30 hints as to how you are to operate as a person because of the monopolization of all of these media by people who aren't even a part of you. People who have dual loyalties. People who are loyal to an international tribe. Whereas you are just a little American and you are loyal probably either to the white people or the black people of America or the native people of America, or maybe you're an immigrant and you're loyal to America and to the country from which you came because you haven't quite settled into the American situation to the point where you can totally identify with it. You're just kind of a wannabe in that case. But you're trying to get on your way to becoming a true American. But it'll take two or three generations for your children to really feel as though they belong here. And it's very tough for you. I know that it is. I have lived in foreign countries, and it's very difficult and very disorienting to try to figure out what the people within that culture are thinking. And my heart goes out to you as a result of your problems in coming here. Now, in my own opinion, you probably should not have come here. You probably should have respected America enough to leave it alone, to stay in your own culture. If you, for instance, are from Saudi Arabia, I think that you should have stayed there where you know exactly what's going on. Why would you go and invade another country like the United States? I know for a fact that Saudi Arabia would not let people from the United States come and invade Saudi Arabia and live there and try to convince other people to, let's say, take on some of these American traits such as Christianity. They wouldn't allow that for an instant. And neither would many of the other Arab states. So I think, at any rate, that this colonization of America by the Zionists and this opening of our borders so that more and more immigrants can come in by the Zionists, who are basically old-time capitalists and communists, who feel that the making of goods and the selling of them at a higher price, kind of like the rag man who buys a rag and then cuts it into four pieces and sells each of the four pieces separately for more than he paid for the original rag, then goes and buys two or three more and does the same thing over and over again. These rag people who run our country are only interested in profits. They're not interested in our people, except exploiting them for their work product, exploiting them for interest rates through the Zionist banks that predominate, and creating a system whereby we, as non-Zionist people, will carry huge sacks of flour and of grain for our masters, and will continue to do so, if necessary, forever. Well, the carrying of the grain has become very, very heavy indeed for us, the neocons, who are basically Judeo-cons. I don't know of a single neocon in the White House who isn't Jewish. And they're always hiding their names. You have people like Scooter Libby, whose real name was Irving Louis Leibowitz. But they call him Scooter Libby, and you almost never see in the press that he's Jewish. You would think that he was the little a Catholic boy down the street from the way they talk about him. Oh, Scooter this and Scooter that. Why not Irving Leibowitz this and that? And the answer is that they just don't want you to know. And if you press them, they will tell you really that it's none of your business. That Jews have a right to hide, and if you are that interested in Jewish people or in Zionists, then there's something wrong with you and we'll have to call you some nasty word. Such as I have been called for many, many years ever since I began the Jew Watch Project in order to pull out from under the dark rock the Zionists and to see why they're hiding, where they're hiding, and what they're up to. Well, the people who are Zionists tell me that I'm a very bad person, that people really shouldn't be watching them. And I reply, well, you bear watching because you're always killing somebody. And they say, well, how is that? I said, well, because before you started Israel, you were killing people in the Soviet Union, which you ran. I suppose that you've forgotten that Mordecai Levy's alias was Karl Marx, and that he was a Jewish boy, and that his father was a rabbi, and he wrote Das Kapital for your friend the Rothschilds, who funds Israel. The Rothschilds, of course, are the largest banking family in the world, and the most wealthy. Their net wealth is in the trillions and trillions and hundreds of trillions of dollars. And, of course, they are the people who fund Israel, and who make trillions of dollars off of the wars that have been fought in this world ever since the Rothschild banks began serving the kings, queens, and presidents of the Western world and exploiting them for a very fancy interest rate, I might add, so that you and I are beholden to them and that what we earn becomes, for them, a repast, a dinner plate from which to feed. And we are nothing but the parasites upon which that dinner plate relies. At any rate, today in the news, the workings of the Rothschilds has borne its fruit in the disaster known as the Lost Colony of Iraq. The war was lost from the beginning. It was meant to be lost. The chaos that was started by this war was the main reason that the war itself was begun. Chaos is the name of the game. Without chaos, there is no profit for an industrialist or a banker. And the most money that can be made is during wartime. And these people are all about money. In the New York Times today, we read that the president, the Zionist president of the United States, George W. Bush, is beginning a fake round of talks on Iraq. He's traveling to the State Department today, according to the New York Times, as part of a round of consultations over how to reshape Iraq policy, saying that it was important that when I do speak to the American people, they will know that I have listened to all aspects of government, blah, blah, blah. Well, this is something that they're doing for public consumption. They're trying to present the president as someone who listens to reason, when in fact, as we all know from the past 6 years of watching this idiot, that he is a bonehead and that he only listens to himself. Mr. Bush is such an egotist that listening to himself is all he cares to do, and it's what he does, and it's what he's about. Now, the pro-Zionist president was scheduled to meet this afternoon with five experts, warlords, in other words, in military and foreign affairs. And four of these warlords have expressed deep skepticism about the recommendations issued last week by the bipartisan Iraq Study Group, which is also a part of a floss that is placed over what is happening today. By having the study group, it makes people look as though there's hope that we might pull out, but as a matter of fact, we will only pull out when all of Baghdad is in flames. All of our bases are in flames, and we leave by helicopter from the top of the Baghdad Hotel. just as we did in Vietnam in disgrace. Because the cards are on the table and we have already lost, and since there's no way that we can win, all we can do now is to further destroy that nation, which is fun and games for the American government. Because the American government is really the American terror state. Usually when someone calls someone else a name, a bad name, it means that they are basically revealing what is in their own heart. And the name that the American government constantly uses today is the word terrorist. Terrorist this, terrorist that. And what it is doing when it uses that word is confessing that the American government is itself the American terrorist state. Who is its best friend? Another terrorist state by the name of Great Britain. And another, Canada, which is a kind of wannabe terrorist state, as well as Australia. They're too small to really be a true terrorist state, so they can only hang on to the coat strings of the great terror states of England and the United States. The rest of the world looks aghast at us. Look at these dirty terrorists running around with their bombs and their airplanes, invading other people and occupying them when they don't want them to be there. What are these terrorists doing? And by that they don't mean the Arabs, they mean what is the United States? What is that terrorist doing? Now Bush will tell you that we're there because 3,000 people were killed in the collapse of the World Trade Center. But what has Mr. Bush done? Has he also not killed 3,000 people? The fact is, Mr. Bush, the warlord, has killed 650,000 Iraqis, according to recent estimates by military experts that have been printed in the newspapers just last week. And it might be as many as a million, and not just 650,000. Or it might be 600,000 instead of 650,000. But we know that it is hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that have been killed by none other than the American terror state. That government across the Atlantic, in North America, that has been run for years by warlords and has been advised by ambassadors from the Rothschild banks, who call themselves various names. They keep changing their names. Sometimes it's the ADL, sometimes it's the Jewish Southern Poverty Law Center. Sometimes it's the IPAC, the Jewish Lobby, the American Israeli Political Action Committee, which all of the politicians in this country kiss up to every year. And they try to get themselves a place to speak on the podium before these folks, because they want their money, because they need their money in order to win. And when you need somebody's money in order to win, it means that you've already lost, that you've basically sold out the American people, and that you have given yourself heart and soul to the Jewish people who run IPAC, the American Israeli Political Action Committee. And so we don't have a foreign policy in America anymore. We have an American Israeli foreign policy, which means it's all about Israel and nothing about America. Because these people are boneheads, and the only thing they are interested in is what will help Israel. Of course, they realize that America must have other friends in China and Japan and elsewhere, and they allow us to do that. They try to pretend that they're very liberal. Well, sure, America, go over and sit down with some of the ministers in Japan. We think that might be a good deal for you. Wink, wink. And so off we go and we sit down with the people in Japan. But while we're there, the Jews ask us, would you please ask the Prime Minister of Japan if he would please say something nice about Israel and maybe stop this certain person down here in some Japanese city who is writing things about Israel that the Israelis really don't like. And we find it very, very hurtful, Mr. President, and we hope that you would help us. And so, of course, when he goes there, he makes certain that he says something about it in public so that his masters in Washington and in Tel Aviv can see that he is doing exactly what they told him to do. And if he does that, then he will get some money for his campaign. He will get some positive media from the Zionist presses in the United States. And he might be able to keep his sorry self in office for a few more years while the American people are milked of their treasury, while their young men and women are blown up in the streets of Baghdad for nothing except for the Jewish menace known as the Israeli terror state, which is headquartered in Tel Aviv, but which is really controlled by the Rothschild banking empire in London, Paris, and elsewhere around the world. Which, according to our friends who are the Zionists, is exactly the way the world should be ordered, because the New World Order, the order of things in which there's only one state which will eventually be headquartered in the city of Jerusalem, and where a Jewish priest in high garb will be the final president of the world, will be ensconced in power, and everyone will bow their knee to this particular ruler. And of course they have made these world religions bow down to the Old Testament and parts of the New Testament and the Koran, in which certain prophecies are made in which this particular scenario is mentioned. And today we have people publishing books about the coming Armageddon, where the people of the world will bow down before their racial superiors, the Jews, and where God will come down and will punish all of the other nations for being mean to Israel, and the country of Israel will take its rightful place as the ruler over all of the little silly people of the world who are non-Jews and who need the Jews to tell them what to do, otherwise they won't be able to make it on this planet. But whether or not that happens in our lifetime or ever doesn't matter. That is the scenario that is in these books, and that we also find in things that the Jews try to play down, like the Protocols of Zion, which they try to say is a forgery. Well, as a matter of fact, every dollar bill in America is a forgery, because it's copied after all of the other dollar bills that have been printed. It's copied after the original one, which was engraved, and then all of the other ones are forgeries of the original. But does that mean they're not dollar bills, and they're not truthfully dollar bills? Of course not. They're forgeries, but still, they are dollar bills. At any rate, our warlord President Bush was scheduled to meet this afternoon with five other warlords at the Pentagon and at the State Department to discuss the deep skepticism they have about the recommendations issued last week by the bipartisan Iraq Study Group. Tomorrow he will also consult by video link with commanders in Iraq and the U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad, who is also being groomed, by the way, to take over Mr. Bolton's spot at the United Nations. Isn't that nice that someone named Khalilzad, who is from the Middle East, would be our next ambassador to the United Nations? That's nice. It helps to gum up the works a little bit to try to get an Arab or a Lebanese person or a Palestinian to pretend to represent the United States, because the other people, through their own racial consciousness, when seeing his face and seeing that he is one of them, will then think that, oh, look, the United States is appointed one of us. Isn't that wonderful? They do love Arabs, don't they? Even though the cluster bombs from the F-16s inside the Israeli planes continue to pound now and then into Palestine and into Arab areas and killing women and children and not soldiers. And where the Israelis say things like, oh, we're so sorry, we didn't mean to hurt those people. And they have said that so many times that no one even listens to them anymore. Well, then on the next day, Wednesday, the president will travel directly to the Pentagon for talks with top warlords there in their native arena, and under intense pressure to change course following his party's losses in the November 7th election and the assessment by the study group that the situation in Iraq is, quote, grave and deteriorating, as they put it, President Bush, the warlord, hopes to deliver a major speech to the American people, who will sit gullibly before their television sets, drooling and drinking their beers and stuffing buttered popcorn down their fat cheeks, a major speech on Iraq before Christmas, in which they will be told how the President of the United States has discussed these things with all of these people, and in his divine judgment, the President, listening to everyone, has decided exactly what he's going to do, which will be, no matter what he says, he's going to keep those troops in Iraq until they become decimated. This man is not going to bring these troops home. Now, he may say, well, I've decided that we are going to begin to withdraw these troops, and we're going to work with the Iraqis to bolster them and make them into a fine democracy. We are not going to cut and run, but we are going to leave within the next year or two. But by the time any withdrawal starts, the president will be out of office, and it will be some other president's job to be the loser in Iraq, so that the president will be able to say in history that I sent the troops and I never withdrew them. It was that other president that followed me. It was Hillary, or it was Rice, or it was Powell, or it was someone else who did that dirty deed. And if you had followed what I said, you would have won. Which is, of course, the lie of lies, because you cannot win in a country that doesn't want to be occupied. It simply cannot be done. It has never been successfully done in the 20th century. And as a matter of fact, the United States of America has never won a war in the 20th century. Now, I realize that those of you who have never heard me speak before are wondering, what is he saying that we have never won a war in the 20th century? Haven't we won World War I and World War II? And the answer is no, we have not won World War I and World War II. We fought World War I to an armistice. Just an armistice, that's all. No one won. Then, because that wasn't settled properly, we then had World War II. And in World War II, we didn't win either because we fought at number one to protect the democracy of Poland, and Poland was lost to the Soviet Union. We fought it to protect all these other countries and to liberate Germany, and half of Germany or a fourth of Germany went to Russia, and the rest of Eastern Europe was taken by Russia. So half of the countries that fought in the World War that we say that we won, which was World War II, were absconded with by the Soviet Union, which was a vicious Jewish-run dictatorship. And that's why we were on the side of Russia. Because the neocons at that time in the White House, such as Harriman and House and Morgenthau, and many, many others who were in the White House, gaining the president's ear and saying, listen, we have to go in against Germany because they are trying to take over the entire world. When, as a matter of fact, all Germany wanted to do was to stop the Soviet Union from killing and killing and killing, because Hitler knew that the Jews who ran the Soviet Union, such as Lazar Kaganovich, Joseph Stalin, who married three Jewesses, Lenin, who married a Jewess, and all their children were Jewish, and the revolution itself was Jewish, and the president of the Soviet Union, not the prime minister, but the president, Sverdlov, the first one was Jewish, and of all of the delegates to the first congresses of the Soviet Union, fully 90% of the people with power were Jews, and many of them came from the city of New York and went over there using Rothschild money, which was given to them by Jacob Schiff, who ran the National Guarantee Bank to fund the Red Revolution, to kill off the Tsar and his family, which was done with a bunch of Jewish thugs who kept the Tsar and his family in a castle until they were murdered. A very brutal murder, and then their royal bodies were ensconced in a forest where they were never to be found again. But fortunately, in the last few years, they were found, and they were given a decent royal burial with the royal flags to try to heal Russia, the Russia that was left after the vile and evil Jewish Soviet Union had destroyed so many of the non-Jewish people in that realm. But this is what they do. They hide behind isms like communism and Christianism, Islamism. They infiltrate. They control. Look at Christianity today. Jesus Christ was a total anti-Semite. He told the Jews in John 8:44 that you are of your father the devil, and he is a liar and was always a liar, and you are a liar and a murderer, and you will always be a liar and a murderer. All of the parables of Jesus Christ were anti-Jewish. They were anti-temple. They said, look, you guys who call yourselves Jews got a hold of God's temple and you wrecked it and you used it for your own purposes and you were apostate and you were evil and you were vile and you're doing this for money and not for God. And you have forgotten the people who were within this realm whom God used to love but who God has abandoned because you are now controlling the situation for Rome and not for the Jewish people who live here. Of course, by that time, the people who lived in Jerusalem were so non-Jewish from intermarrying with everybody else that, according to the Bible, Jesus and John the Baptist both had to be made by the hand of God and placed into the womb of a virgin and of a barren woman so that real godly people could be born as messiahs again. because the seed line of the Jews had been basically destroyed by intermarrying for hundreds and hundreds of years with the natives all around, so that they really weren't Jews anymore, but they were fake Jews. At any rate, we don't want to get too far into religion, except that it is this religion that has been controlling communism and Zionism and all of these other deadly isms that are basically driving our world today. I would love to be able to come in and say, well, we don't have to worry about socialism, which was Jewish, or communism, which was Jewish, or psychiatry, which is Jewish, or psychology, which is a Jewish science, or sociology, which is an invented science by Jews, or of Israel, which was invented by Jews. We don't have to deal with these things anymore. We can be free people. But the fact is, we cannot be free until we buy our freedom. And we only buy our freedom through the knowledge of the history of what has happened to us. But what has happened to our history? Our history has been purchased by the Jewish elites, the Rothschilds, the moneyed empire that runs our country. They own basically 95% of our publishing houses. They own the History Channel. And what did the History Channel originally show? Of course, they showed Adolf Hitler in order to demean the German people and to continue the blood libel that the Jews had promulgated against them at the Holocaust conference known as the Nuremberg trial, which was run by the Jews of the Soviet Union and their anti-fascist committee, which had been formed by Stalin in order to foment lies about Russia, lies about, you know, showing Russia was good, and lies about Germany, showing that Germany was bad. It was the anti-fascist committee that tried to rationalize the murder of the people at the Katyn Forest in Poland who were murdered by the Jewish fascists of the KGB under Stalin. And they then turned around and said, no, we didn't murder them. The Germans murdered them. Well, the Germans dug these people up, the elites of Poland that were murdered by the Soviets after they drove the Soviets out, and they brought all of the Western journalists there to show them what the Russians had done. And from the examination of the papers in their pockets and when their letters ended when the Soviets were in charge. And there were no letters when the Germans were in charge, so they knew that the Germans hadn't killed them, but the Soviets had. But this didn't deter the Soviets at the Nuremberg trials of bringing in very credible witnesses who swore up and down that they saw the Germans lining these elitists of the Polish army, this intelligentsia, up and killing them with guns fired at the back of their head at trenches. But no one could ever find those trenches. The real trenches were the ones that were found by the Germans. Now, I always say, if they're going to lie about the Katyn Forest massacre, guess what? They're probably also going to lie about the Holocaust, about the gassing of Jews, about the use of Jewish soap, the lie about the lampshades, and all of the other lies that were told and which were found to be false. I have on my website, Jewwatch, a film by David Cole, a little Jewish boy wearing a skull cap, a yarmulke. He goes into the so-called gas chamber that you will see if you go to Auschwitz. And I suggest all of you go to Auschwitz and take a look at it, because you will find out what propaganda and tourism melded together are like, because this has become a really profitable business for the Polish people. There are literally tens of thousands of people a month that go to the Auschwitz Museum to listen to the balderdash about the Holocaust, which is totally disproven by the remains of that particular camp. For instance, in that camp, if you see this film, you will find that the camp had an Art Deco swimming pool for the people who worked there, that they had brick buildings for the people to live in, that they had orchestras for these people. And there are films about this which I have placed on Jewwatch showing the Jews playing their orchestra renditions at Auschwitz for very well-dressed and very well-fed Jews who worked there and who were dressed well and very well behaved. They were not dead. They were enjoying opera. They were enjoying music. They were enjoying musicals. They were also playing soccer. And they were enjoying themselves. They were extremely happy, smiling. They were not what you hear today. Well, you can either believe the witnesses who tell you that they were mistreated, or you can look at the film that was taken, miles and miles of it, and ask yourself, what's the truth? Is the film right? Are all these films wrong, and these vicious statements of blood libel against the Germans, is this libel, this blood libel against an entire race of Germans, is this right? Did the Germans build the Art Deco swimming pool just simply because they wanted to have a nice swimming pool there so that after they let the Jews, I guess, swim in the pool, they take them down and gas them in a chamber, which later was found to be simply a shower, and the walls were scraped, and they found no evidence of gas in the walls, which they would have found in the walls if they had been gassed there. Just barely a trace was found, but in a little place where they threw their clothes to get rid of the lice, the amount of gas that was in those walls of that particular chamber where no people were ever gassed, but their clothes were gassed, it went off the wall. Yes, there was gas there, but a few feet away in the very shower that they were supposed to be murdered in, there was no gas. But if you say that in Germany, well, you can go to jail. If you say it in France, well, you can go to jail. If you say it in Austria, you can go to jail. But fortunately, I'm in the United States of America, which is a declining democracy and a rising fascist nation, a national terror state, which has been unleashed upon the world today to the chagrin and the horror of people in the Soviet Union, or what was the Soviet Union, which is now a democracy and going the other way toward democracy, by the Chinese and all of the Europeans. And they look at what America is doing, that great terror state, and the terror that has been unleashed upon the people of Baghdad and other cities in Iraq, and they look at us and they think, my God, what happened to those people? Well, Zionism is what happened to those people. Zionism is exactly what happened to the United States of America. We have slept with Zionists, and we have become killers. That is exactly what has happened. We have slept with the Zionists, and we have become like them. We have become torturers. We have become killers. We have been bombers of cities. Look at that shock and awe. Remember Rumsfeld? We're going to give them shock and awe. We don't care how many children we have to kill beneath our bombs. We're going to bomb downtown Baghdad filled with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, knowing full well we're going to kill women and children, and we're going to bomb them day after day, night after night, until we have our way with them. And if you don't think there's collateral damage down there and little girls and boys and women having their arms and legs and heads blown off, well, you need to think again. And the president, the warmonger, needs to think again, too, because he is indeed, along with all of his henchmen, all of those Judeocons in the White House who told him, listen, Buster, you need to go into Iran, and you need to go into Iraq first, because Ariel Sharon told you you should, which is exactly what Ariel Sharon said we should do the day after the World Trade Center fell. He announced, you Americans need to get into Iraq immediately as a result of this. Of course, it doesn't matter that Iraq had nothing to do with it. It doesn't matter that the pilots and everyone else that was associated with it came from Egypt and from Saudi Arabia. It doesn't matter that the Osama bin Laden family, the Osama bin Laden family, is a friend of the President of the United States, that great warmonger who came from Maine but pretends that he's a cowboy in Texas. These things don't matter. What the Judeocons want is for their little people, their little parasites, the United States of America, to fight their wars for them. And the Jews were promised in the Bible all the land from the Nile to the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, which is, of course, right there at Baghdad, isn't it? So off we go, because our Jewish masters tell us to do so, into the heartland of Iraq, a nation that hates us because we've been bombing them already for over 10 years, ever since they went into Kuwait. And 10 years before that, we had them fighting in Iran, where they lost a million or so people, and the blood flowed daily. And then, as I say, we bombed them for another 10 years, and according to Madeleine Albright, the 1 million or so children that died there, well, that was a good enough price to pay. That was fair because it was for the Jews, it was for Israel, it was for the Zionists. And they are the true friends of America. course, at the same time, she had said before, "I'm not a Jew, I am an Episcopalian, and how dare you think that I'm Jewish?" And then after the Jew Watch Project outed her as a Jew, using newspapers not only in Europe but in Jerusalem itself, she admitted, yes, once it was printed in the New York Times, "Look at me, I'm a Jew, I never had any idea." Of course, she's been reading everyone else's dossier as the head of the United Nations for the United States, as their ambassador. And they've been reading her, so they knew that she was Jewish. They knew her parents were Jewish, that they lived in Prague, and that they were diplomats for Czechoslovakia, and that when Hitler came in during the Anschluss, the gathering together, the regathering, which, by the way, is also what Israel calls itself, the regathering of the Jewish people, because both of these isms, Nazism and Zionism, are racist situations where the people who live in an area want to naturally gather their people together into a fortress nation where they can keep all other people out and where they can continue to grow their nation so that they become the richest power on earth, etc., etc., etc. And we've heard it all of our lives, and we hear it in the United States of America, but because the Jews run the United States of America, because the Zionists, the IPAC runs the Congress, because the Rothschild banks are the only big enough entities to purchase billion-dollar properties like Viacom and ABC and CBS and NBC and the New York Times and the Washington Post, and everything that you see or hear, Doubleday, everything is owned by these Zionist persons who have no interest whatsoever in giving a fair picture of what's going on in the Middle East, so that all you hear is, this is what the Zionists did, and the Zionists are good, and this is what the Arabs did, and the Arabs are evil. And why don't we make up a name for the Arabs? Why don't we call them the Islamo-fascists? And when we call them the Islamo-fascists, why don't we say that these evil Islamo-fascists want to kill all of the poor little Jewish people of this world? Whereas, as a matter of fact, if you look at the activities and the fact that 10 to 100 times the number of people killed are Arabs and not Jews, that for every Jew you have between 10 and 100 Arabs killed in this conflict, then you begin to see that it is the Jews who are doing the killing, and it is the Arabs who are reacting and trying to chase them away. But the moment that the Arabs pick up a little stone and throw it at a Jewish trooper who then kills the child that picked up the stone, they look at that Arab child and say, he's a vile person. He is an Islamo-fascist. He deserved to be killed. He was threatening a Jewish person. And look what happened to the Jews. They suffered in the Holocaust. 6 million of them died. Mantra after mantra after mantra of the Holocaust comes up. They hold up the sign anti-Semite. They hold up a picture of Adolf Hitler, and they try to shame anyone who tells the Israelis that, no, you shouldn't kill little boys who throw rocks at you. In fact, you probably shouldn't be in their little town there trying to occupy them, because you have the far larger area of Israel, so why don't you leave these little kids alone? Go back to Tel Aviv and enjoy yourselves, and just leave these kids alone. You've taken half of their country away, the best half, the fertile half. Why don't you just quit killing them? Don't you think that would be a good idea, Mr. Olmert? Mr. Adolf Hitler of Tel Aviv, don't you think it would be good if you took your Nazi Jewish uniform off and you stopped being a fascist pig? Don't you think it would be a good idea if you refused to lie and say that, well, two of our soldiers were kidnapped by Hezbollah, so now we're going to murder 2,000 or 3,000 people in Lebanon, and we're going to reduce parts of Beirut to ashes? Don't you think it would have been nice if you just told the truth and let everybody know, well, they weren't really captured, we think they were dead, because it looked to us like they were fatally wounded when they disappeared? Well, that's just come out this week, hasn't it? Of course, Olmert, when he mentioned it, he said, came back a couple of days later and said, oh, no, we didn't mean to say that. No, we think they're still alive. No, they didn't think they were still alive. They knew they were dead, but they pulled this little heartstring called kidnapped. Oh, these little Jews were kidnapped. And now we have to go into Lebanon and try to find them. Well, how many times have you seen a kidnapping in the United States when the federal government unleashed its army upon a city trying to look for some kids that were kidnapped? Does that ever happen? I don't think so. The last time I heard of it happening was Helen of Troy, I believe. You know, where the wife of the king's son was captured. Let's see, who was it? It was Menelaus's wife, wasn't it? Menelaus. He was king of the city, and she was captured by Paris, went off to Troy. So then the whole Greek navy goes and they wipe out the Trojans, who later become the Romans, who turn around and wipe out the Greeks, blah, 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 blah. But at any rate, this is not something that usually happens. When someone kidnaps a soldier, which is basically a piece of cannon fodder, that's all they are. I mean, you know, we've lost, 3,000 of them now in Iraq? These aren't people. These are, in the parlance of that fine Jewish scholar, Henry Kissinger, who is a capitalist pig, who has been one of the neocons who has helped to destroy our country the most. He said that that these are cannon fodder. The soldiers are nothing but cannon fodder to be used by the government and to be wasted. So here you have two pieces of cannon fodder, Israelis, who are wasted by these Hezbollah, but the Adolf Hitler Olmert, the president, the Führer of the Nazi Empire of Israel, decides that he's going to use that as the pretext to invade his Poland, which is Lebanon. So, he uses this pretext, he invades Lebanon, and the American people don't see very much of it, but they see enough to get a real bitter taste in their mouth for this fascist Nazi state of Jews who have no respect for human life within a city. And they throw cluster bombs, and children are being injured, and it seems like a vast overreaction for such a kind and gentle people as the Jews, which we are constantly told are kind and gentle, and off they go to war, and they reveal themselves to us in our films that we see as absolute killers. And of course, the Jew Watch Project was very instrumental in this, because of those of you who came here and you looked at the pictures, you could see exactly who they were killing, when they were killing them. The headlines are still up there. Some of the pictures have dropped off, unfortunately, but the next war, the pictures will never drop off. And the pictures of the last half of the war will stay on my site forever, because the killings of the Lebanese people and of the Palestinian people deserve to be archived forever, so that these people will be able to say, we did not die for nothing. We are not like the Palestinians who were in Haifa, who were run into the ground, whose cities were destroyed, whose buildings were destroyed, whose streets were renamed, whose graves were dug up and scattered so no one even knew that they ever lived here before. No, these things are being archived forever so that the sins of the Zionists will be seen, so that they can be hauled before The Hague and they can be tried and executed for their war crimes, the same way that the henchmen of Hitler were tried for their war crimes, although I doubt that the war crimes that they were tried for I don't think they really occurred. Because there were so many lies at the Nuremberg trial, and we're never going to find out what happened, because it was a trial that was basically run by and for the Jews of the Soviet Union, who were the anti-fascist committee, who were told by Stalin to make things up about Germany, to make them look really bad, and to hide all of the BS that happened by the Soviet Union in terms of the killing of 65 million people. Hide that by bringing up the straw man, the Germans, and their killing of 6 million people in the Holocaust. And so that's what was done. And will we ever know that that's what was done? Well, already we have plenty of evidence. As I say, David Cole's movie is on Jew Watch. And if you'll just go to Google and type in David Cole on Jew Watch, guess what? That movie will show up. It will. Or if you go to the first page of Jew Watch and you hit Control F for Find, you type in Auschwitz, it will take you to that movie. You download the movie, it's 20 million bytes, and you will be absolutely amazed. And by the way, there are other films on Jew Watch from YouTube and from Google, which will show you the brutality and the evilness of the Zionist Empire and its treatment of these poor people on the edge of that empire, and how they are destroying their houses one by one, moving them back block by block from Israel, then walking in later and absconding with the land, saying, oh, look, this is empty land. We'd better take it, or there will be a lack of security here. We're taking it so that it will remain peaceful. if it remains empty, then there's a power vacuum, and we'll have to do something about that. Now, it doesn't matter that it was the Zionists who created the power vacuum, who removed the poor people who were just unfortunate enough to have their house right next to the Israeli bunkers, which were built right on their border. And then when they did enough to really anger the people, some of the kids whose dads were killed or their brothers or mothers by these vile Zionist Nazi fighting pigs who came in and destroyed them and killed them, which you can see in these films on my site. And you can't argue with the films because you actually see these Zionists murdering these kids over and over again, time after time. If you think they're brothers and sisters and daughters and sons are not going to strap on a bomb and go into an Israeli mall and kill some Israelis in revenge, then you've got another thing coming. But I will tell you this. If the United States were as friendly with the Palestinians as they are with the Israelis and gave them the same F-16s and the same cluster bombs, those kids wouldn't have to do that to get their revenge. They would be able to take their nice, bright, and shiny, air-conditioned MP3 dashboard-controlled plane, their F-16, and fly it over Tel Aviv and bomb the hell out of the Israelis from the air, where they wouldn't even be seen. They'd be so high up. They get accurate bombings of the ministries of Israel. They could go on to Tel Aviv, and they could just bomb them and bomb them and bomb them, and their kids would not have to strap on a bomb. And if they bombed them enough, they'd probably give up and go away, and the murders would begin to cease. Oh, I know, that would be bad. Jews good, Arabs bad. Let me say it again. Jews good, Arabs bad. 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 I think sometime in the future I'm going to catch on to this. I'm going to see the vileness of the Arabs and the goodness of the Jews. I'm sure that I will. And I sure hope that I do, because I probably won't be a very happy individual until I can see that, because I keep seeing it on the media. And if it doesn't take, then it gives me a kind of psychic aberration, kind of schizophrenia, that what I see on the TV, Jews good, Arabs bad, and when I see on my internet site what is really happening, Jews killing Arabs, Arabs not fighting back, Arabs dying, then Arabs fighting back a little bit with a little rock, and then a little kid gets killed, and I think Jew bad, Arab good, well, then when I look at the TV again, I become mentally frustrated, because I really want to be an agreeable person. If the TV tells me that the Jews are good and the Arabs are bad, then I don't want to have to believe that the Jews are bad and the Arabs are good. So maybe you Jewish folks could help me. Maybe you could stop killing these Arab kids. Do you think you could do that for me? You think you could put your guns down and quit killing these women and children? You think you could quit bombing them from the sky and saying, oh, we killed a family of 22 in Beit Hanun, and we're terribly sorry. We didn't mean to do it. We were trying to hit another house. And then the next day they hit another house, and then another and another. And it just doesn't seem to sink in to the American people that the Zionists are a bunch of killers, warmongers, and liars, and that they have turned the American people into a bunch of Zionists, killers, and liars. And even the Christians of this country now call themselves Judeo-Christianity, and Jesus Christ himself would be throwing up blood if he knew that this is what was going on with the church that was founded around him, because he even went into the Jewish synagogue and started overturning the tables of the money changers and forecast this stupid temple is going to be torn down in 3 days and made to rubble, and it will never be rebuilt again, etc., 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 because he didn't want the Zionists, the people of Mount Zion, to be ruling there, because he considered them to be an aberration, a bunch of materialist pigs who were interested in money only and not in his Father who was God. And that's what the Bible says. And you don't have to be a biblical person. But you see, the Jewish people try to use the Bible to tell you that they belong on Mount Zion, and they belong there with that temple, and they belong there killing Palestinians and Arabs because they are invaders and the Jews, although the fact that they've lived in Europe for 2,000 years, nonetheless, they belong there controlling Jerusalem because God gave it to them. It doesn't matter that their bloodline is totally different and that they're fake Jews and not real Jews, that they're really a bunch of Mongols who invaded the Soviet Union, or what became the Soviet Union, and they settled in the Caucasus Mountains between Turkey and Kiev, and they converted to Judaism because they didn't want to be a Christian and they didn't want to be a Turk, because if they were either a Christian or a Turk, they'd have to fight the Turks or the Christians, so they became Jews. They don't have an ounce of Jewish blood. They're not the sons of the Jewish people or the Hebrew people of the Bible. They are imposters. And they're interested in money. They're interested in killing the people around them because they're very political. And the reason they're political is that when they lived in that little area of the Caucasus, they had to be very politically astute. And they found that they could put it over on these stupid Europeans and these stupid Middle Easterners, and they could have their way with them. And they've had their way with us. I think the Soviet Union is certainly having their way with us. I think that pulling America and England into World War I, because the Jewish people did not like the Germans, they considered them to be their natural enemy, and so they wanted us to go after them, even though, guess what, when they got kicked out of Spain, some of them, or some of their friends did, guess what, Germany was the only country of Europe that would let them in, and Germany had a very good relationship with the Jews for hundreds and hundreds of years. But the blood libel is that the Jews themselves were persecuted by the Germans. Well, I don't really think so. There's a book out called Hitler's Jewish Soldiers, which showed that these half-Jews and quarter-Jews got along very well and even became honorary Aryans if they were brave enough in World War II. And much of what was said about Germany was an outright lie that didn't start until 1947. But if you want to be stupid, if you want to believe that what Jewish propagandists in Hollywood say about the Germans in their movies that are in black and white, and where they have, you know, O'Brien, I forget his first name, but that star O'Brien, you know, leading the GIs across the sands of Iwo Jima, etc., and John Wayne, you know, smoking a cigarette, getting shot by a Jap at Mount Sarabachi. If you want to believe that these are true renditions of the Germans and the Japanese people, well, I feel very sorry for you, because you're just looking at propaganda there. It may warm your heart, but it's not about true people. The Germans were very nice to the American soldiers when they were captured, but the Americans, let me remind you, murdered in their camps through starvation more German soldiers than died in all of the years of World War II from 1938 and 39 to 1945. In a six-month period, more than double that amount died in our camps because we wouldn't feed them. We did to them what we said they did to the Jews. Of course, the soldiers in there had nothing to do with the Jews, had nothing to do with the camps. They were simply soldiers, and we decided we wanted to commit genocide on them. And so we killed them, but we'll have to follow that in another one of our meetings. Thank you very much for listening to The World Today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the founder, the librarian, the journalist, and the editor for Jew Watch.